Hamiltonian density is pi dot plus pi dagger guy. You should be trying to get to the part. Minus L. Now, everybody know where that came from? Remember in the mechanics case? The Hamiltonian is the sum
subtract the
pi xi dot. Right, sum over I minus L. You sum over all degrees of freedom here. Since we have two theos, we're going to put a both here.
Okay.
So that's just the sum of all the P's with all the actions.
It's actually a big L, capital L, not curly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So what is that? Well, pi we found. That's the partial of L with respect to phi dot. And if we look at this part, we have phi star dot phi dot minus grad phi star dot grad phi. So when I take a derivative with respect to phi dot, I get phi star dot. And similarly, pi star, we take the derivative with respect to pi star dot, and that's going to be pi dot. We did that before, but we need that now for the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian density is going to be, pi dot is pi star, so we get pi star. And it looks like we get two of those, because this is the pi star, and that is a pi, so we have two of these. Then we subtract L. Well, in terms of pi, L has a pi and a pi star. And then we subtract grad pi star dot grad pi, and m squared phi star phi to get phi star plus grad phi star dot grad phi plus m squared phi star phi. So pretty much like last time, except now we've got phi's and phi stars and phi's and phi stars. Not a huge difference. And then the Hamiltonian is the integral of H over all space. Okay, now I want to make this an operator. Right? This is the classical theory. What is the Hamiltonian operator?
Everything but the stars are Hermitian continuous.
No C's, right?
So pi star plus grad pi dot grad pi. Okay, but that is now, right? Is that it? Well, I'm help me out. Because here I've got like pi pi dagger, here I've got pi dagger pi. Should I have written pi dagger pi here? Or pi pi dagger there? What should I have written here?
Isn't the normal ordering on the other?
Normal order the whole thing. That's what we're saying. We have to normal order when we have anything that's got products of yield. Right? So it's just automatically normal order.
Okay. It's a rule. It'll work.
But we don't know what the order is yet because we don't know what the other.
Yeah, the
we have to put in
the ordering is defined in terms of raising and lowering operators. Now, you know, you might worry that is a limited way to do it because, you know, what if you're dealing with some field that is where, you know, the it depends on, you know, phi dot to the fifth, and you know there is no A and A dagger. Well, we don't know of any fields that do that. Right? All of the fields that we find physically specify Klein-Gordon type actions, and you can introduce raising and lowering operators. You may have to tune up the rules a little bit, tune up the commutation relations to anti-commutation relations, for example, for drag fields. But we will be able to write a Fourier series for everything in sight. Now, when you do quantum fields in curved space-time, and now you can't do Fourier series again, and you have to worry about, you know, whether everything in sight is well defined. And people have written books on that. You can do things perturbatively against backgrounds, and but you know if you can come up with a complete set of functions, if you have a linear field equation, you know you'll probably be all right. But there are limits to the methods that we're using here. Okay, so what do you think? Do you want to do that as an exercise, or do you want to, shall we just work through it now? What do you guys want to do?
Let me just ask, we're normal ordering it because it's the product of two fields?
Yes.
And that's always the
case. We don't know whether to write pi dagger or
with any of the
pi dagger or pi dagger pi or some combination of those. So we say, well, we're going to normal order it. What normal ordering means essentially is that we are defining the vacuum to have zero energy. Normal ordering, when we look at the charge current, which I particularly want to do for this system. For a charge current, normal ordering means that the vacuum has an electric charge. That's consistent with observation too. So these are probably okay things to be doing. Doesn't matter if you want to see it, you know, we can work through it. Or
so it means that we're defining the energy for the whole system to be zero?
The energy for the vacuum state.
The vacuum state.
Remember, this is an operator. So we create eigenstates of the Hamiltonian by acting with any of the various A daggers. Remember, there's an A dagger for each three momentum P. So as many A daggers as we like on the vacuum, each of them creates one quantum, and we'll add E sub P to the eigenvalue of H. So when we act with H on the zero state, the vacuum, we get zero. By definition, by diligent use of coal. Okay. Tell me what you want to see. I'm into either way. If you'd like to have a crack at, you know, working this out yourself, it's similar to what we did before. But, you know, it's a little different.
So this pi zero point is to avoid infinity, right?
Yeah, it does that. That's curse. What I didn't say is if the vacuum has energy, it's infinite. But
you sure?
Okay. Can we press on? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we look at the normal order integral of pi dagger d3 x. So once again, just go term by term. And the pi and pi dagger are pi dot kinds of things, pi dagger dot, pi dot kinds of things. And let's see. We've got these the wrong way around, right? So we have to remember what our solution for pi was. We had pi written out before, right? Maybe I should stick it in here. Do you have them there? Phi and pi.
Let's see. Phi is integral d3t over 2 pi cubed root 2et paren a sub p e to the negative I p dot x plus b b p dagger e to the I p dot x.
Right.
And pi?
Is it like negative 2i?
Is
2e I
integral d3p 2 pi over 2 pi cubed root 2ep times iep and then paren ap dagger e to the ip dot x minus b sub p e to the negative I p dot x.
Okay. And then the dagger, we can take the daggers of that, so that's fine. Let's see, if we reverse the order of these and put a minus sign, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. But let's just write this out. So d3t over 2 pi cubed root twice ep. And then we're going to have d3q, 2 pi cubed, root twice q. Then we'll have two factors minus, I ep times I eq is minus ep eq. Then, not forget our normal ordering. We're going to have a product of A dagger P e to the I P dot X minus B P e to the minus I P dot X. I got that right?
Yep.
Times the similar thing with Q, A Q dagger E to the Oh, no, this is dagger, right? So this one is not dagger. This is e to the minus I q dot x. Then we have minus dp dq dagger e to the plus I q dot x. And we have a dq dagger. Okay. So there's our e squared thing. The x integral allows us to form a bunch of delta functions. And if we then do, let's see, if we multiply this out and do the x integral, we're going to get a bunch of delta functions. Then if we do the q integral over those delta functions, it's going to change all the q's to plus or minus t. Should we try it all at once, or do you want to do it in two steps? Is that too much to do at once?
Maybe if we foil it out, I think we could do it after that. But
all right, let's.
You can't foil in my head.
You can't what in your head?
Foil the multiply out the parentheses.
Oh, okay.
First, have that inside last.
Yeah.
I learned that out in algebra one. Two pi.
Yeah, the delta functions are going to give us 2 by 2. Then we have AT dagger A Q. Sorry, integral D3X gives us a del 3 of T minus Q. Then we have the time integral E to the I EP minus EQ times T. But EP equals EQ when it's next to this delta function. So the time dependence of this term goes away. Oh, this stuff makes my nose itch. Okay, then we have minus AT dagger DQ dagger. That should be a Q there. So now we have a del 3 of T plus Q. And we have an exponential in the time, 2i dt times time. And the second in between term, dt a Q. Del 3 of t plus q. And again, we get a time, an exponential e to the minus 2i e t t. And finally, plus dt dq dagger del 3 of t minus q. And no time exponential. Close parenthesis. So now we do the Q integral, changes all the Q's to plus or minus T. Don't forget our colon. Let's see. Okay, we're integrating over all the delta functions, so EP becomes equal to EQ. And these terms, all right, this is going to give us twice EP. This gives us minus EP squared, so we get minus EP over 2 from all of these factors. Then AP dagger AT minus AP dagger D of minus T dagger is the 2i EPT minus D of T A sub minus T is the minus 2i EPT plus BP BP dagger very good. And I think that's about the first one. Go with that one. Let's try the next. Grad phi dot grad phi dagger.
What ordering is it? A dagger? The normal ordering? Or?
I haven't done the normal ordering yet.
Okay.
We probably could do it at this point. All it would change is the last term. The BP, BP dagger would become BP dagger BP.
Okay.
The others you can write in any order anyway.
Oh, I see. Because you stop for other terms, you got to go away still. So. Right.
Yeah, that's the only
I see.
That's okay. The only place where you've got to...
Okay.
Yeah, any difference that matters.
Right. We expect the middle two terms to go away because when you add it to the
other
terms.
Yeah,
right, okay.
We put it all together.
Right.
Should drop out. So I'll just carry it in normal order.
Okay.
So I don't actually see any reason not to do it at this point. Let's see. So we've got all these integrals. Let's see. Any chance we can spare this and make sense of it? No, we better write it out at least. I to the 6, we've got 4 dt equals q. that's still there, right? And then we just have these factors. We have the gradient of this and the gradient of its dagger. Now, what's that going to do? When I take a gradient of a term like this, I'm going to pull down what is minus I? This is E d t minus vector p dot x here. So I have a plus I p dot x. The gradient is going to pull down plus I p from this. It's going to pull down minus I p from that. So the gradient is going to put a minus sign on these terms. And then we have an overall I p. So the overall plus I p, presumably dotted with some q kind of stuff. And then we're going to end up with this, except for the minus sign between. So AP is a minus I P dot X minus DP dagger EPI P dot X. And now we have a Q term. Any questions on this term? So let's see, I haven't written out psi dagger. But it's going to change the daggers on this. It's also going to change the signs and then those exponents. So the A term, we're now going to pull down a minus I Q. And then we have A Q dagger E to the I Q dot X. So because we took the dagger, this became plus, which means that the Q dot X three vector part has a minus sign to it. So we pull down a minus I Q here when we take the gradient. Then the B term is going to have the opposite sign. I've pulled out a minus I Q, so I need to make that one minus 10. It'll be B Q, E to the minus I Q dot X. So there's the next term. So it's nice, the I times the minus I just gives 1. And we have a p dot q, which is going to become plus or minus a p squared. And, I wonder how much we can do in our head. Alright, we end up with normal order, we end up with D3P over 2 pi where this is going to be a factor of P squared. But now notice, if Q is equal to minus P, there's going to be a minus sign because I pulled out a plus P squared here. So if P equals Q, we get this. If P equals minus Q, we'll have an additional minus sign in the product. So let's look at these products. This one gives us a delta P minus Q. The energy goes away, so we have an AP dagger with no factor. Then this one with the last one, there's a minus sign here, but we're going to get a delta of P plus Q, so it's going to change that to a plus. And we'll have AP D of minus P, and we will have a time factor E to the minus 2I DPT. Then we move to this term. Okay, we have a plus again, delta of P plus Q here. That's going to introduce a minus sign here, so this becomes a plus. So everything's going to be plus. We have a BP dagger, and we have an A minus P dagger, and we have E to the 2I EPT. And finally, two pluses. We have the delta in P minus Q, so no further sign change. We have a BP dagger, and a B, D. And semicolon for normal order. Not that a full colon for normal order. So, that wasn't so bad. Any questions on how I got it? Exercise, fill in the missing steps.
Do it anyway.
Any questions on it? I shouldn't be so eager to save myself writing. You see what I did, Chip?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there. Look at the first term.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I have the difference between I have e to the I of 2 minus t dot x here.
Oh, okay.
When I do the integral d3x, that's going to give me a three-dimensional delta function in t minus q. So it's just a step here. The product of these integrated d3x gave me that delta function times 2 pi q. So I cancel one of the 2 pi q. Okay. So delta functions are easy. I can do them in my head. See? So imagine integrating over that delta function. What does it do? It sets
p
equal to p.
So it's zero.
So I get just these two things with q replaced by p. And out here, this q gets replaced by p, so I get a p squared.
Okay.
So I've done the first term in three steps.
Okay.
You do the same thing for each of the four terms you get when you multiply this out. Right? You happy with that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. All right. So we've got one more to do and no space to do it. Okay. Sure, I know you're fine. Let's see. I guess I can erase these. Because we have the commutation relations for these. And they're easy. So, yeah, I'm going to erase this. I didn't have time to look at the file she sent me. What did she send me, Juan?
Oh, I sent all the Tevin and Corinne files along with the file that we did on last Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay.
And also last Friday's lecture, so.
Okay. Oh, great.
Right.
Okay.
So two zip files. So.
I probably didn't want to erase that. Yeah, all right. Too bad about that one. We need normal ordered m squared d3x. My data is fine. Okay, we're going to have d3t, d3q, d3x. Over 2 pi to the 6. Then we have the square root of 4 ep eq. We've got the m squared come along. Then we've got the product of the stuff I erased. So, alright, let's see. Point was it? A t dagger e to the I t dot x. This is a dagger. Is it
plus? Hold on. Yeah. Yep.
E to the minus I t dot x.
Yep.
So that's a dagger. Thank you. Okay, we do the actinidal. I'll just do everything here. Now we've got all that luxurious space, we might as well. A2 dagger, A2. This gives the delta function, L3 to C minus T. Then we get A to be dagger B cube dagger del 3 of B plus Q exponential 2I E B. Then this term is BP A cube del 3 of B plus Q. Exponential n minus 2i dt. And finally, dt, dt dagger, del 3 t minus t. Yes, Mark?
Why is that that you get delta b minus q first and then P plus Q. How is that going to change?
Okay. In the first term, I'm multiplying this one times that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have A T dagger A Q, and I've got E to the I T minus Q dot X. I'm integrating this D3X. And so I get A T dagger A Q. Those just depend on T and Q, as the integrals independent of those. Then here I have, remember this is a four-dimensional dot product. So I have e to the I ep minus eq times t. Then I have integral d3x e to the, it'll be then minus I t minus q vector dot vector x. This is 2 pi cubed del 3 of q minus q. That's the completeness relation for Fourier mode. So the fact that p is going to be equal to q means ep is equal to eq. So that term drops out. And I'm just left with ap, aq, 2 pi cubed del 3 of q minus q. Right. So I've written the delta function. I've already canceled the 2 pi cubed, and then it's the AA dagger. So, then it's I.
Good? Yeah, but no, you have P plus Q.
Okay, P plus Q. Look what's happening here.
Yeah.
This is this term with that term. Now, the exponentials have the same sign. Right? Here they had opposite signs. Here they have the same sign. That's why I'm left with an energy thing, because now the energies add.
Yes.
And the delta function has a P plus Q here, so I get delta of P plus Q. Delta.
Right, I was wondering about that too.
So this is a four-dimensional dot product.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's the time piece and the space piece.
Okay.
We're integrating just D3X, so everything else comes out of that D3X integral. All right, so the integral over X is e to the minus I anything X is a delta function.
So it should be minus. It should be e to the minus I then, right?
For e to the minus where?
Yeah, delta function. It should be e to the minus I. E to the minus.
Doesn't matter. It's symmetric in the argument. So
okay.
If I have integral d 3x e to the, say I've got plus I k x, just do one dimension here, right? I can think of that as integral dx e to the minus I minus k x. That's delta, that's 2 pi times delta of minus k. The delta of minus k is the same as delta of k. It's symmetric.
So it won't matter.
Okay, because you're saying you think about proving this by going on real number line and going all the way around.
Yeah.
If you want to die off at infinity. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to go in the lower half plane.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You can get either of them to, you know,
to vanish.
In some appropriate half plane, you can get it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. You can do it either way.
Oh, okay.
Try it. Okay. So contour integral to prove that. Yeah, I probably only said all these things, you know, like once, so you're justified in asking me up to 4 more times.
Good time is not good, right?
Yeah, half a dozen presentations, okay. By then, I hope it's in. Okay, so let me see. So the next thing we do, the easy integral is the dq integral. That just takes out the delta function. So it says all the q is equal to p or equal to minus p, depending on which term we have. So I do the integral. End up with d3p. Well, I'm 2 pi q. Let's see. What happens to these energies? Were they there last time?
The bottom one.
Yeah.
They were there in all of them.
Oh, because we just have a single E there. Okay.
The pi times pi dagger, we simplified it this time, but before we didn't simplify it. So we left the numerator and denominator that way. So there's a common denominator where we add them all.
I see what I'm saying. Okay. Oh, I should
have simplified.
Well, now what happened to it? Oh, did I just
forgot?
I forgot,
oh,
I
forgot to write it there. Yeah.
Okay. So here, that should have been c squared over 2ep.
Oops. Okay.
And let's see. So
right.
We got it.
There's
here,
a c squared.
Right? So I probably should have left the factor here, but. We have that factor here too. So we have m squared over twice dp.
Okay.
Eq is equal to dp because of the delta function. And then ap dagger ap plus ap dagger d of minus p dagger e to the 2 pi e to t plus c t a of minus t e to minus 2 pi e t t and finally d t d dagger of minus t normal. Okay, so we've got all of the pieces.
Before we add, there's one more mistake.
Oh,
the pi times pi dagger.
Yeah.
So the second multiplier in parentheses is in the wrong. Well, all you need to do, it's not minus ep times eq. There's no minus sign because we wrote it down wrong here. It should be b dagger minus a or I think I may have dictated it to you wrong, but looking back, I'm not sure if I dictated it wrong or when we moved it from that board to that board,
mm-hmm.
we changed the order. But we changed, when you wrote it down last week, we changed the order to give us the same sign. But when we wrote it down here, we didn't flip the order. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. So is this pi? This is the right thing for pi?
Yes.
And then dagger is that. That's okay.
Should be the same.
So then when I take a time derivative, I'm pulling down IEP here.
Are these minus signs?
So they
come from the differentiation.
Right. So the first one is okay, but the second one should be the negative of that. It should be negative AQ plus B that. Or we could have left it that way and just gotten rid of that negative sign that that's in the front of EP times EQ.
Okay. So
it ends up just being in the very last line.
Here we can change the sign.
Yes. But go back and change it to what it was up there.
I didn't change the sign. So I'll leave the sign and then put it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I see.
And I'm not sure where that is. I was trying to add them all together.
So this is right now.
I think that's good. Right. Yeah. Okay. That last line there.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. All right. The definitive screenshot. And then I'm going to need to erase somewhere.
Okay.
Good?
Yes, I don't have this one over here yet.
B dagger, no exponential, and it comes in with a positive e to t squared here, then plus p squared plus n squared. Okay, so since p squared plus n squared is ep squared, I can just pull out an ep squared. Let's see. So I get a 2 ep squared. So we're going to have b3t over 2 pi cubed. Then we have an overall factor of ep times ap dagger ap plus bp bp dagger. Yeah. Normal order. Should be normal ordering here. And finally, B3P, 2 pi cubed, from the energy times the number operator for particles and the number operator for antiparticles.
Isn't that the wrong order?
I dropped the normal order.
Isn't the creation operator supposed to be to the right?
Oh. No. Okay. We want it to annihilate the vacuum.
Okay.
So we want the annihilation operators first.
Okay.
To hit first. So, that's it. That's what we would hope. So, what do? We take the energy of the particle with momentum p. We multiply by the sum of the number of particles and the number of antiparticles of that momentum. And then, all right, that gives us the total energy from particles of free momentum p. Now we sum that over all possible free momenta. That gives us the total energy of all of the quanta that are out there. Over 2 pi cubed, that's probably just some volume. That's probably a 2 pi h bar cube, by the way.
I'm working through it, putting in all the h bars, actually.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. All c's as well, you know.
Good. Yeah.
They're in there.
What would we want here? Yeah, p over h bar is going to put this in, you know, this inverse length. Let's see, but A had units of length of the 3/2, was it? So, here we have units of length of the 3/2 squared. Then here, P cubed over H bar cubed goes like 1 over length cubed. So, that's just going to balance. So, the dimensions of this exactly cancel the A dagger A, and we're left with units of energy. So, charge. Get one.
What we have done.
What we have done is to compute the form of the Hamiltonian operator in terms of the mode amplitude of the 5 and 5 dagger field. Okay, so we started with the action for a charge for a complex scalar field. We'll see in a minute that it's charged, but for a complex scalar field. We computed the conjugate momenta. We found the form of the classical Hamiltonian by a standard classical mechanics, classical field theory. And that gives us this expression up here for the Hamiltonian in terms of the conjugate momentum and fields and field derivatives. So now all we've done is substitute in the expressions we got last time, actually the solution to the field equation is a Fourier series, a Fourier integral for pi and phi, right? When we make pi and phi into operators, the mode amplitudes in that Fourier integral become operators too. the A dagger, B dagger become operators. And we've already computed commutation relations for those. We know they act like raising and lowering operators. So what we have done here is to substitute in for the field in terms of the raising and lowering operators. So we've recast our Hamiltonian operator in a form where we know how to construct eigenstates of this thing, right, in these terms, just like the harmonic oscillator. All right, A dagger A or B dagger B act like number operators. They count the number of quanta in a state. So I guess we can say how we construct states. So eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. Alright, this is a standard argument, so I won't go through the whole argument, but the eigenstate alpha will be creation operators of both kinds. P prime 1 dagger through B dagger B prime M acting on the vacuum with some normalization, but let's not worry about the normalization. Right, this is a state that would be labeled by what? Well, it would be labeled by all these momenta. Commutation relations as the A's and the B's, that these are eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. If the Hamiltonian acts on this, it's going to pull out the energy of each of these things. This is a state that has n particles of momenta P1 through Pn and m antiparticles of momenta P1 through Pm. The energy of that state acting on this P1 through P prime M is going to be what? It's going to be the sum of the energies of all those particles. So it's going to be E P1 plus E P2 plus E Pn plus the energy of the first antiparticle up through all the antiparticles P M prime. Times
the same thing.
Okay?
These antiparticles, where did they go?
Okay, I haven't made the argument yet that they're antiparticles. So far as we see here, we just have two Klein-Gordon fields, phi and phi star. Both satisfy the Klein-Gordon equation. They both have the same energy. So far it just looks like two particles instead of one. Mm-hmm. But wait till we compute the charge. That's what we'll do next. Alright, the action for the complex scalar field is real. So if we change phi by a constant phase, then that means the action invariant. So it has a global U1 symmetry. If we find the conserved Noether current corresponding to that U1 symmetry, we know that that current is an electrostatic. Not static, it's current. It's the current for the electromagnetic field, the source of the electromagnetic field. And it carries the charge of some fundamental particle. So we know that the U1 current, the U1 Noether current for any action, will couple to electromagnetism. So particles that have a U1 symmetry, whose action has a U1 symmetry, will be able to absorb and emit photons. They interact electromagnetically. It means they can absorb or emit photons. And what we'll see is now when we compute those that current, okay, well, the current's going to be in terms of phi and pi dot and, you know, stuff like that. And we'll write that in terms of A and A daggers. We'll see that these two come in with the opposite sign. So the total charge will be not the number operator for particles plus the number operator for antiparticles. It'll be number operator for particles minus the number operator for antiparticles. And so we see that the B-type particles have the opposite electric charge from the A-type particles. And this is cool because we derive this from fundamental symmetry principles and reaction. That's all that's gone into this, and canonical quantization. So pretty neat. So we have a set about that.
So this is this Hamming form only works for charged particles, right?
This one is the Hamiltonian for a charged scalar field. So we derived this from the Klein-Gordon action. You could have some other scalar field even, and it would have a different Hamiltonian. So for that action, the action we started with, this is the Hamiltonian. You start with a different action, you've got different field equations, you'll have different energy expressions. But these are the ones that are typical. Not, there aren't many scalar particles around. They're mostly vector particles or spinner particles. But if you had scalar particles, this is what they do. Okay, so to find the charge, let's look at the U1 current. Let's go back to the action.
Is this all considered Dirac theory still?
No, we're not too Dirac yet.
Oh, we're not
Dirac.
It's
all quantum field theory. We're stepping our way through the quantum field. So, recap, okay? We looked at a lot of Lorentz transformations and symmetry to find representations of the Lorentz group. And what we found were that there are certain kinds of objects that the Lorentz group acts on. Scalars, it leaves alone. Spinners, it does the Dirac thing on spinners. We know how to do Lorentz transformations of spinner fields. We did some. Vector fields, like electromagnetism. We wrote down a few different vector fields. We didn't go on to spin 2, but you can have any integer multiple of spin 1/2 particle. So we could probably write an action for such fields. Those are the things the Lorentz group acts on. So now we're going back to the beginning and saying, okay, what's the simplest thing the Lorentz group acts on?
A scalar field.
Klein-Gordon scalar field. Why hide it? What's the next simplest thing?
Complex
scalar field. Quantize it. What's the next thing? Dirac. Quantize it. So we're going to go through this procedure again for Dirac. And again for E and M. Right? Quantize all of these fields. Look at how they couple. Look at how they scatter. You know, we're building the apparatus. We're taking our time. We're going through carefully, doing all this stuff, not just studying the answers. Good to actually see that it works out.
I'm just saying, would it be very similar for the Dirac field? You've been writing dagger instead of star, you know.
Well, dagger because it's a Hermitian operator.
Okay.
The fields are Hermitian operators.
Okay.
So dagger is right there, you know, who knows what space it lives in, but it's some Hermitian operator.
Okay.
Yeah, Dirac will probably have bars and stuff. This is a dagger times a gamma zero.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it'll all be worse. Yeah, Dirac's funny because that action is so fun. you know, we found the stress energy tensor, the energy momentum tensor wasn't necessarily symmetric or even symmetrized.
Right.
The, the conjugate momentum doesn't have any derivatives in it. Right. The conjugate momentum, you take a derivative with respect to psi dot. Well, there's only one derivative in the action, so you just get, psi bar times a gamma matrix or something, gamma zeros, as your conjugate momentum. I mean, everything's weird with Dirac, but it still all worked. And so, that's next. Let's find this charge. So, what was the action? We had the integral of d mu phi star d mu phi minus m squared phi star phi. So that was the action all this started from. And it has a global u1 invariant. If we replace phi by e to the I alpha phi and phi star by e to the minus I alpha phi star, it leaves that action invariant. That's immediate. If we apply the Noether's theorem, I guess we have this in it. Shall we just redo it? I forget how it did this. So we looked at the general variation of the action. So we're going to have d mu del phi star d mu phi plus d mu phi star d mu del phi minus m squared del phi star phi minus m squared phi star del phi. And that gives us two surface terms, right? If we try to free up the del phi so we get field equation, we will get the divergence, say, d mu of del phi star d mu phi. And from this one, if I raise and lower a pair here, then we'll also have du of phi star del phi. There we go. And then subtract the box term, so we have del phi star box phi plus m squared phi. And we have minus del phi times box plus m squared phi star. All d for x. Okay, so that's what we get when we vary the action, just a general variation, saying nothing about vanishing on the boundary. Right, normally, when we're finding the field equation, this divergence term is integrated to the boundary and we say it vanishes. But we're not saying that now. We're just looking at the general variation. That, in fact, is our conserved current because when we make two restrictions, when del phi is a symmetry and when the field equation holds, then because del phi is a symmetry, del s is zero. Because the field equation holds, these two terms just drop out, and we're left with this term that just has to vanish all by itself. That's the vanishing of the divergence of a current. So the thing in parentheses here is a current. And I want to write it over here, because I'm hoping we'll be able to use this stuff again. So I don't want to erase it. I'm not sure if we will, but let me just try and stay in this region. Then what we see is that the conserved current, J mu, is going to be, we can always stick some constant in here, but what we get is del phi star du phi plus du phi star del phi. And del phi is just what? An infinitesimal transformation. The infinitesimal change in phi under an infinitesimal transformation is just I alpha phi. Del phi star is going to be the conjugate of that. So if I substitute in, I've got some constant I alpha lambda. Del phi star gives me minus phi star du phi. Then del phi gives me plus I alpha, so d mu phi star times phi. So this quantity is our current. Let's choose lambda to be something like, probably I times an electric charge is what should go there. And then we get J mu is phi d mu phi star minus phi star d mu phi. And that gives us the charge operator is the normal ordered product. It's the integral of J mu d3x. J zero. You take the time component, remember the proof that this is conserved. D mu J mu is zero from here. If I look at ddt of q, that becomes d zero of J zero. We use the conservation D mu J mu to write this as minus grad J. Integrate that to the surface, and you get that the time rate of change of charge is the rate at which current flows out over the boundary. Take the boundary to infinity, so that's zero, and the charge is conserved. So we've got a conserved current here, and we write it in terms of J0, so this becomes of some constant. I'm going to stick the IE here. I'm just guessing that that's the right thing, but I define my defining.
Is it your real number?
It should be a real number.
Okay.
That's why I left the I in. And I don't know if the particle or the antiparticle is going to come out with positive or negative charge this way, but they'll come out opposite. That's the main thing. But you see what we have is phi times phi star dot minus phi star times phi dot. D3x, normal order. So that's the thing we want. And let's see. Well, maybe we can't preserve a whole lot of this, but let's see. Should we write that in terms of phi's and pi? Is that easier? So we have I, E, normal order. That's phi. Phi star dot is just pi, right? And then we have phi star, and then phi dot is x. So, is that right? Am I remembering that right? They were each other's conjugate. So phi pi minus phi dagger pi dagger. So that's what we need to compute. So here, we had something like that. If I replace pi here by phi dagger, we can get one of these. Let's see. What does that do? Instead of 2 pi, let me just have you read it to me again.
Okay.
Okay, so let's do the first one. So find pi.
Phi is C3P2, okay, it's A sub P.
Okay, let's see. So phi is this integral, then we have A sub P e to the minus I px.
Yep. Plus dp dagger.
E to the plus I px.
Yeah.
Okay, and then pi?
Pi is...
of a factor, right?
I e p. And then A sub Q dagger E to the I U dot X. Minus B P. Oh, yeah. E to the negative I U dot X.
Okay. All B3X.
Normal.
Not so bad. So let's see, how many steps do we take at once? One, two, three. Yeah, right. Okay. So D3C the delta functions will cancel one of those. We have 4 EP Q. D32. So I E P A T A Q dagger L 3 D minus Q minus A T D2 L3 P plus Q E to the minus I DP 2I DP D plus DP dagger AQ dagger E to the 2I DP C L3 P plus Q minus D dagger P D Q exponential delta P minus 2. Integrate over the delta function. So that's just D 3 P over 2 pi Q root 4 E that's just 2 E P. We have IEP. We have AP A dagger P minus AP B minus P E to the minus 2 IEP plus DP dagger A minus P dagger E to the 2 IEP minus DP dagger DP. And then for and that's all that normal work. For the second part we have phi dagger pi dagger D3X normal order equals normal order. So let's see, what's gonna be different here? I want the dagger of all of that. So I'm going to have AP dagger E to the I P dot X plus DP E to the minus I P dot X minus IEP AQ E to the minus I Q dot X minus D to dagger E to the I Q dot X. So that's what we have instead. So let's see. I'll jump straight to the second step. D3T. 2 pi, 2, twice. The delta functions are going to miss those times. So I'll just write that. Then we're going to have, we have minus I dt. And then AP dagger AQ L3T minus T was AP dagger, minus AP dagger BQ dagger delta 3 D plus Q plus BP AQ delta 3 P plus Q. I forgot the energy on these. E to the 2i EPT. E to the minus 2i EPT. And finally, minus BP BQ dagger. So we do the Q integral. We have D3T over 2 by 2. We have minus IEP over 2EP. AP dagger AP minus AP dagger B minus P dagger E to the 2i dt plus dp a minus p e to the minus 2i dt minus dp b dagger p normal order. Okay, so we want to take the difference between these two expressions. So where can I put it? Come up here. Get factor of 2 And then we have the AP, AB, AP dagger AP. Those two added. This one and that one cancel. This one and that one cancel. And then these two add with a minus sign.
You need the normal order to do that, right?
Do they come out different? Yeah, they did, didn't they? The other two were the same, weren't they? Yeah. Okay. So, normal ordering. The twos are going to cancel. Okay, so we do the normal ordering and we get a charge, we get a sum over possible momentum. The I's go away, the 2 goes away, and we just have the number operators with a minus sign this time. DP daggers first, then annihilation operators second. And that is our charge operator for the complex scalar field. The fact that the number operators come in with the opposite sign tells us that there is a difference between the A-type particles and the B-type particles. The Bs, but remember, both phi and phi dagger have both types. So it's not just phi and phi dagger. Phi has an A and a B dagger, and phi dagger has the opposite. So they both have combinations of particle and antiparticle. So that's the first thing that leads us to say, oh, antiparticle. A state of this field with the opposite sign from the other state of the field. And notice that we're always, you're familiar with these number operators, right? The action of A dagger A on a quantum harmonic oscillator of state N, pull tab N, right? It tells you how many quanta you've excited. So for a simple harmonic oscillator, you know, there's only one type of excitation of your guitar strings. You can... And they're integer. So you can excite the first mode or the second mode or some superposition of modes, but, you know, the nth mode, you know, has n oscillations in the length of the string. You know, pretty clear what those are, and you get a superposition of all of those. So if you have a pure mode that's got n oscillations in it, A dagger A will give you the result n. Well, here, the interpretation is slightly different. It's counting the number of particles. So each time you act with an A dagger, you create a particle of that given momentum. A dagger A will count the number of particles you've created of a given momentum, P. Then you sum over all P. So what you're summing here is the number of particles of momentum P minus the number of antiparticles of momentum P. That's the net charge for all particles of momentum P, and you sum that over all momenta, that gives you the total charge of all of the particles in space. Right.
That should be zero then, right?
Good question. Not in the observable universe. We've seen. Where are they all? Most of the stuff we see is particles, not antiparticles. Oddly enough. But, yeah, so it does make people wonder whether there's some reason that there was a slight abundance of one type over the other, and most of them annihilated, and you're left with a bunch of particles, or, you know, some other sort of spontaneous symmetry breaking, or we're going to one day see in the very corner of the universe somewhere, oh, that was like a lot of matter, antimatter annihilation, everything on the other side is antimatter. I mean, you know, that could be too. just got somehow separated. No mechanism to separate it that I can think of, but not possible. So, stuff like that.
I think so. There are a lot of steps I need to study in here. But
can I help with any of them? We'll do these same steps over and over.
Well, when we finally applied the normal ordering, see, did we actually do anything?
Well, one of the beads, we had one bead dagger up there.
So that just swapped and combined and factored out and canceled.
Yeah. Well, it gave a factor of two.
Yeah. Right.
So those two add and we canceled the two. I don't know why we had it for B.
Oh, the A's aren't the same either.
They're not? Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, we have an AA dagger and an A dagger A down below.
And those combined to make two. I see.
Yeah, so the two there already incorporated the normal ordering as well.
The
Quaternion's right.
It's still true because you can put them. You can write them either way I want as long as I've got the colon there. Yeah.
So, if the number of antiparticles is greater than the number of particles, we would get a minus sign there?
Yeah.
Huh?
Okay. That's right. So, if you have a bunch of antiprotons, so you go to CERN and, you know, the first thing they do is they collide a beam into some kind of target that produces a whole lot of antiprotons. Then you store up a bunch of antiprotons in the ring. What you want to do is get protons going one way and the antiprotons going the other, and then you collide them in the center of mass. So having a particle and antiparticle to accelerate means they'll want to accelerate in opposite directions. Works out just great. But yeah, you'd make a whole bunch of antiprotons. So in that beam, if you calculate the, you know, the particle number, it's going to come up with a whole bunch of negative protons. So, other questions? What can you say about it? Yeah, that's probably all we can do with this.
The way that these operators work is you actually, whatever state you're acting on, you actually it goes inside the integral.
Yeah.
Not this integral time that state, right?
Integral the operator.
The integral
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like a differential operator where we say it's this way.
The vacuum's not some momentum dependent thing that you have to worry about integrating. You just bring that state in.
Mm-hmm.
Now these A's act on it, and now the state becomes momentum dependent together. That's it. So you add up all of those.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the potential to add lots of particles in it. Of course, when you get interactions and these divergent terms in interaction, you can see what happens because if you have a virtual particle in an interaction that you don't measure, it could have any momentum at all. You've got to do the momentum integral as part of the calculation of the scattering probability. Well, those things tend to diverge because that's a lot of momentum. Okay, let's see. How you doing? Can we start to interact, or do you want to bag it for today? We just answer questions.
Do we have a similar equation for mass?
Well, the mass is part of the energy. So, let's see. Yeah, we could compute. Oh, here'd be a good exercise. Compute the momentum. All right. We have a momentum operator, right? It's going to be. If you compute the stress energy, compute the energy momentum tensor for the charge to the complex Taylor field, and if it's T mu nu, then T 0 0, the time-time component, integrated D3x, will be the Hamiltonian. T 0 I, integrated D3x, will be the momentum, P I. So, conserve energy momentum means we have actually T mu is the integral of T mu 0 D 3x. Well, what we just did was P 0. That's the total energy. If you can also look at P I, the conserved momentum of the scalar field. Alright, this follows from the action. Alright, you know from chapter 2 or 3, whichever, how to compute the stress energy tensor for the scalar field. It's in the book. You have the book?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so textbook theta. I think he called it capital theta.
Right, yeah.
You know, what it's going to be is, you know, I think it ends up looking something like,
in the book,
you know, phi dot star grad phi, you know, plus or minus grad phi star phi dot. It's something like that. But you can compute this. Right. So exercise. Find that in terms of A and A dagger. What's the answer? What should you expect to get?
That was P units.
Vector P right there.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. So the answer, the calculation, math. So the answer is easy. Just count the number of particles, count the number of antiparticles of momentum P, multiply by the momentum P, add that up over all momentum. That's the total momentum of the vehicle.
Are you going to get the minus sign there?
No, it'll be plus. It'll be like the Hamiltonian. It'll be like this. If you calculate the current, the electric current, right, this is the time component of an electromagnetic current, right? So there would be an expression like this where you've got some, you know, some velocity here or something. That might be different or not. Yeah, it'd be different because you've got opposite signs. So even if they're both moving the same way, the B's carry the opposite charge, so the current would be negative. So, if you compute that, Ji, the I components of the nuclear current. Right, so compute the I components of that. Right, and you'll have to find it. The velocity, you know, for the velocity, you're going to have, let's see, it will be a gradient here. So what's going to happen? You have a dt in the denominator, but you'll have a momentum in the top. So you have something like mv over mc squared, c's one, you'll have v over c here, something like that. So it'll be like a current. So those are two exercises.
What's the other one?
Oh, which reminds me, I graded this next.
Jeff. Round of applause for Jeff. Jeff actually did some problems.
Yay, Jeff.
All right. Good.
I emailed you some problems, but yeah, it's got to be in there.
Oh, that's right. You sent me that. Round of applause for Juan.
So what's the other exercise then?
Compute the charge current, right? The spatial component.
I see. Okay, right.
You do one term.
Right. It's just the zero component, right.
Yeah. So, you know, they look very much like work through one of these things. You know, it'll make a big difference to just go through it yourself. And, you know, you'll be skipping steps in no time. do you guys want to try and do more? You want to bag it for today? What are you doing?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Along the lines of what I was asking you on Friday.
Okay.
But here, the global U1 invariants, the coordinates don't change. They do, or there's no, you know, you've written down some transformations here, but there's no transformation.
Alpha is a constant.
Right.
Yeah, okay. That's what makes it global. The parameter of the lead group does not depend on the space-time.
Okay, but there's no variance of the... Here, when you do the general variance of that...
No variation of the volume.
There's no variation
of the volume. No.
Okay.
Real coordinate. Yeah, even at that level, not real.
Okay.
If we had SC2 invariants, would we get like more terms over here then? Like C dagger C or something, D dagger, or, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, so SC2, now we've got a bunch of fields.
Right.
A bunch of vector fields. So, you know, we got to do the whole E&M thing, right? But, yeah, let's see. Suppose phi was... Well, let's think what would happen for, say, the W and V particles. You could construct operators that raise and lower the number of W pluses or the number of V naughts or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, you'd have A's and A daggers for each particle size. Mm. Because you have fields for each particle size. What does the field look like? Right. Now, we haven't done Maxwell yet, but take the Maxwell example and now put another index on everything and sum over that index. Well, you're summing up, you know, three things that look a lot like Maxwell, but worse. So, yeah, that's kind of sort of hairy, but you get to do these calculations. Fairly quickly. This, of course, is all non-interacting, you know, free field stuff. And what really gets to be the interesting thing is to talk about particles scattering off one another. That's what you measure in the laboratory. That requires looking at interaction. So
things capital V.
Yeah. So we'll have found out all of this stuff about each of these fields in isolation. Now we need a technique for perturbatively calculating what happens when they bounce off one another. That's where we start to see the Feynman path integrals as a way of systematically doing a perturbation theory in some interaction. So basically, you still have just particles going along. You create these states and they just go along, but some of these states are going to turn into other states when you get scattering. But that requires terms in the action that don't just, right, you know, what does something like this do when it hits a state? Well, it annihilates the state of momentum B and then it creates it back again. So it doesn't do anything. It's just some normalization. What to do is count it. But, you know, in here it measures the charge, but it doesn't end up making a net change in the state. It's just counting numbers of particles. An interaction term is something like having a covariant derivative here, where d mu phi, say, we now have a vector potential, i.e. a mu phi. So now there's going to be a term like that in here. So we'll have things that look like, let's say, d mu phi star a mu phi, you know, with some constant. So now there's a term like that in the action. Well, what does that do? What you do is you solve the free field theory and then add perturbative stuff. And the perturbation is infinite series and stuff that looks like that. So to the degree that lambda is small enough, you can look at a few terms. But if you look at what this turns into, you know, this thing has, say, an A in it, and this has, let's see, what would it be called here? You know, probably an S1 mu dagger in it, and this has an A dagger in it. So what happens when this hits some state, okay, this annihilates a particle of momentum T. This creates a photon of polarization epsilon. This creates another particle of momentum, well, P prime probably, not necessarily the same T. There are factors that come from this. So what you've done is you had a phi particle come in, it's annihilated, and then you create a phi going out and a photon going out. So at first order, you see you have this diagram. Well, in a path interval, you know, you've got e to the I over h bar times the action. You've got an exponential in the action, which means you've got an exponential in this term, so it actually is an infinite power series. So then there are terms with two of these diagrams, where you get this thing squared. So, you know, there will be another one, you know, maybe like that. Anything you can build out of two of those vertices is what you'll get at quadratic order in the Taylor series of that exponential. And so on. Higher and higher orders, lambda's small and the series converges fairly quickly, or you end up drawing an awful lot of diagrams. But you can see how it all hangs together, how you do these computations.
Other questions?
So we're on for tomorrow 1:30.
Yep. Glad that 1:30.
So we don't have photons yet. We have no photons.
No, that's the vector field, right?
But we right. Do have charged particles.
We do have charged particles.
Okay.
Right. So still only scalar fields. So next time I'll do Dirac particles. Those are more charged particles. Those are complex. So we'll get a current for those as well. Then we'll do E and M. Is a Maxwell action, one time back field. So, a little bit more complexity because we've got, you know, it's all vectors, and there's more than one polarization for a photon, so we'll have to sort through all that. So, each new field we do, you know, okay, yes, we do a lot of these same calculations over and over, but there will be new features each time. So you'll recognize this procedure every time. You know, we'll go through this all. But at the same time, we have to deal with the new features that come up with each one. But yeah, try those things. Okay.
So we get these creation and annihilation operators that look like simple harmonic ones from regular quantum mechanics.
Right.
Because we have an action that is quadratic in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we don't have something that's quadratic in the field, do we not get such a pretty picture with annihilation and creation operators?
Right.
Maybe fourth order.
Yeah, fourth order, you're going to have, you know, phi to the fourth somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, what's that going to be? you could calculate an energy, but it's not going to come out. Well, the first problem right off the bat is, how do you solve that field equation? We've been using a classical solution to the field equation here, right? We solved it by Fourier modes. You can't do that with a nonlinear equation. So if you have a phi fourth in your action, you're going to have a phi cubed in the field equation. Not linear, no Fourier theory. Right? Now it's Green function time.
Okay.
You've got some source. Or perturbation theory. what happens. So what you do is you solve the quadratic part, and then you treat that fourth order thing as a perturbation, as an interaction of the field with itself. So if you had that, you wouldn't need the photon here to get some interaction. If you've got a lambda phi to the fourth sitting out here, think of that as an interaction where now, okay, so what can happen? Well, buried inside phi to the fourth, you have A's and A daggers. You could have a couple of A daggers and a couple of A's in some term inside that. So what that do when it hits some state is it annihilates a P and a P prime and produces a P double prime and a P triple prime, subject to overall conservation momentum. So you get two phi particles coming in, you get two phi particles going out, for example. But they scatter. They change momentum. You could have three daggers, in which case you flip one of these around and you have one phi coming in and you have three going out. Either of those can happen. But remember, each phi is some A plus A dagger type stuff, well, A plus B dagger type stuff, but you multiply all that out, there's a whole lot of different terms going on there. All the different combinations can occur and give different interactions. Well, there are certain symmetry considerations that govern this. In fact, almost any time you can draw something with four legs, you can flip one of the legs to another any way you like. These things always have that sort of symmetry. So it doesn't matter whether something coming in the initial state or going out in the final state, you can flip them around. As long as you have something come in, everything else going out, it's cool. It's probably allowed.
So in classical mechanics, again, well, not classical mechanics, but quantum mechanics, if I wanted to do a free, without a free field or a free particle,
mm-hmm.
I actually would only have the kinetic energy term, right? There wouldn't be, so there's this, I'm seeing a weird thing, which is that when we go to fields, we have something with two terms that's quadratic in the field,
mm-hmm.
but, and it's like, if I want the Hamiltonian for a free particle, I just end up getting p squared over 2m, you know what I mean, or whatever the analogy of that is. So there's this, these are free fields, but we end up getting, this is what I'm trying to say. So in quantum mechanics, for a free field, we get some continuous spectrum of things. Where we put it in a potential, like a simple harmonic oscillator potential,
yeah.
Then we get creation and annihilation operators. Here, we haven't even put it in any kind of potential yet, or there's nothing, or it has its own potential already associated with it, this mass potential, or whatever that thing is. You see what I'm saying? So that
we
get annihilation and creation operators, and we aren't even dealing, that we have no potential yet in the...
Yeah, I think the...
Obviously, I'm making some weird analogy.
One way to see what that happens is to look at the differential equation you're solving. Okay, in the case of the Schrodinger equation, if you just have a free particle in the Schrodinger equation, no potential, then you've just got the Laplacian.
Mm-hmm.
And, what can a Laplacian do? It doesn't oscillate very well.
Right.
I guess you can have some oscillatory parts of the solution. But if you add the quadratic potential, okay, now a simple harmonic oscillator, you know exactly what that does. But in a field theory, we're writing a wave equation right off the bat. Right? We're writing a box, right? That box has oscillating solutions. If you look at just the wave equation like this, right, that has solutions e to the I k dot x minus omega t, okay, that's cool. But if you say, well, I have these quantum relations that tell me that h bar k is the momentum and h bar omega is the energy, so I want to write that as
e to the I over h bar times c dot x minus dt. Well, okay, that makes sense. So now I've got a way to describe the particle, except that now if I compute box of that thing, it's not allowed to be zero, right? Because the ddt pulls down the minus I e over h bar squared, and then we have minus the c pulls down I c over h bar squared, and that's minus minus 1 over h bar squared. E squared, minus t squared. Okay. That's not zero, that's m squared.
Okay.
There's a fine. You can come to a pure wave equation if you wanted to describe a normal particle with mass, is you've got to have that mass term as well. It's easy to write an action that does that. So yeah, you could think of that as an interaction if you want, but it's also just a massive wave. It's a wave that has mass by virtue of its energy and momentum and relativity. So either way you want to measure it. Okay. And then Schrodinger is a non-relativistic approximation to all this anyway, but you know, with the Schrodinger equation, you're describing mechanical systems and thinking a lot about x and p as the dynamical variables. So a lot of the interpretations are skewed towards coordinates and stuff. But it's really dynamical variables, and it really comes from just some general quadratic thing. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Hey, you have a question. You might have a question.
No, right now, no.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So, did you bang it? Get off.